and welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. Whether you work for government or industry, we're here to help you understand the other side a little bit better. Our mission is to make government contracting better, one contract at a time. Today's episode is brought to you by ProPricer, the number one proposal pricing and cost analysis software used by federal agencies and government contractors from small businesses to large businesses. Most people know that large prime contractors use ProPricer's robust custom reporting features to run what-if scenarios with just a few clicks instead of spending hours or days trying to tease that data out of a homegrown system.
But I didn't know that small businesses can also use ProPricer because they can standardize their pricing procedures and replace those error-prone spreadsheets they normally use.
Yeah, I used to spend a huge amount of time manually creating and recreating complex pricing spreadsheets, and I still had formula errors. ProPricer solves that problem.
And contracting officers can use ProPricer to actually seamlessly import contractor cost data and then do an apples-to-apples comparison of the cost data.
To learn more about ProPricer and help keep the podcast free, visit our podcast site at ProPricer.com/podcast. All right, let's get started. Hey, Kevin. Today, we're going to talk about letter contracts.
We are. Letter contracts is a way for the government to get work started quickly before having to agree to every detail of the contract.
So a letter contract can literally be a letter. That's where the term comes from. A letter contract is just a simple contractual vehicle that says, go ahead, contractor, get started. And it can include some details about what's going on, but it can be as simple as get started. There's a few things that a letter contract has to have in it. There's a few things that a letter contract can't have in it. We're going to talk about those in a minute. But the basic idea is that it could be a letter that says, get started doing this as your end goal. When would the government use a letter contract, Kevin?
When they're in a hurry. When they need to get something done quickly, when work needs to start immediately. The recent examples would be after 9/11.
Yeah, 9/11 actually isn't that super recent anymore.
Wow, you're right. Ouch, that's painful. Okay, so it feels recent because, wow, that was an interesting time to be a contracting officer. But the basic idea. It's a sole source negotiation situation because you're awarding to one company. And it really is a way to get things moving fast when performance needs to start now. And it needs to be approved. You know, we're going to talk through all that, but that's really when you need it or when you do this is we need this to start now.
Let's go to FAR time.
Yay!
This is FAR 16.603. This is where it describes letter contracts. And what it says is a letter contract is some kind of written contractual instrument that authorizes a contractor to start immediately, either manufacturing supplies or performing services. They can be used, a letter contract can be used, according to the FAR, like we discussed, when it's in the government's interest to start work immediately and when you don't have time to negotiate a definitive contract, when you don't have time to agree to every single detail. FAR also says a letter contract should be as complete and definite as possible under the circumstances. So you could have a lot of the terms and conditions agreed to in a letter contract, just not all of them. Or you could have almost none of them agreed to at a time.
And an example of this is I've done letter contracts as a modification to a contract. Is that we didn't have all of the details, but it was a mod. So we knew most of the work was already lined up. But because we needed it was software development. We needed to have it done very quickly. So we said, well, this one thing, which was how much it was really going to cost in the end, we couldn't quite decide on. But instead of spending the next 6 months guessing, let's just get moving because it needed to get done.
Yeah. That's a perfect example. Sometimes these are called undefinitized contract actions, which is probably what your mod situation was. So you might hear undefinitized contract action or UCA, or if you're a pronouncer of acronyms, UCA. People say that all the time. Let's talk about what has to be in a letter contract. First, a letter contract must have a negotiated schedule that includes when the contractor's going to submit their proposal, the due date for that, and what kind of pricing data the contractor has to submit with their proposal. There's a few other things, but those are the big ones. Letter contract also has to include a start date for when you're going to start negotiating this and a stop date. It has to have a target date for negotiating the final contract. And what the word the FAR uses is target date for definitization. And I think contracts people get a lot of flack for that word. Definitization. The root is definite, right?
Yeah, and it's one of those words that it, in this context, it makes complete sense, but it's one of those words that gets made up for the government folks. But remember what you're doing. You're defining the actual contract. That's the big difference here, is you need to decide, when are we going to start landing the plane here and knocking out these details and getting a final document. So that's why it's so important to have a schedule for that. Because think about what you're doing. You started work and you said you'd figure the rest out later. Well, you got to decide what later is.
So it actually says, the target date for definitization shall be the earliest practicable date. But it also says, within 180 days or before 40% of the work is complete, whichever is first is what you're aiming for. And that time period or the amount of work can be extended in extreme cases.
And the government's maximum liability here is that it shall not exceed 50% of the estimated cost, unless that's approved in advance. So in other words, a $10 million contract, you can't just go spend $10 million and go, okay, let's start negotiating. It's got to start before right. then.
They're trying to bind you into actually getting it negotiated before the work's complete.
Yeah, and these things are not done in a vacuum. I mean, to get the ones that I've done approved, it was its own effort. Right. You're not going through, this isn't something a contracting officer can just do.
If you can't come to agreement on the price and fee for this, if the government and the contractor can't come to agreement, the contracting officer can actually unilaterally determine what they think is a reasonable cost or fee. They have to get some approvals to do that. But in the most extreme cases, the FAR gives an out. If these things can't be negotiated, the CO can unilaterally do it.
Yeah, it can unilaterally close negotiations. That's true.
The FAR actually gives you three shall nots as well. What a letter to contract shall not do. First, it says a letter contract can't commit the government in excess of the funds available at the time when they sign the letter contract. So they actually have to have money. They can't just say, get started working and we'll try to find some money for this.
Yeah, that's a big no-no.
Second thing is, you can't skip competition unless you actually write a justification or approval to award without competition. And that's in FAR Part 6. We have a whole podcast on that. The last thing, letter contract can't be amended to add new requirements unless those requirements are inseparable from the existing letter contract. So you can't just keep adding work on and adding work on and adding work on and having a perpetual letter contract. All right, back to what letter contracts must have in them. There's actually three clauses that are required in a letter contract. One that describes the rules for starting work. It says you can't start till everybody signs this piece of paper. One clause that says the government will only pay you up to the maximum amount spelled out in the letter contract. So it's got a ceiling on it. And the third clause spells out that definitization schedule that says the contractor is going to submit their proposal here. We're going to start negotiations here. And we're going to have this thing definitized by this date. So why are letter contracts important, Kevin?
It's a faster way to get things done. The government contracting process can take a long time. And letter contracts allow to shorten that process. So they're important because when you need them, they're a great tool. Now, they're also combined with a justification and approval. There are other steps to them. But what makes them so useful is that there are times, and we could list off probably a few dozen of them just from experience, where you need something to get done now. This allows you to say, you know what? This has to get done. We need to award this contract in the interest of supporting our customer quickly, whatever, you know, the national security, whatever the reasoning is for your agency, a letter contract allows you to do that. And it's, again, already in the FAR.
Let's get specific. Why should the government care about letter contracts? I think it's because a letter contract could be your only way of meeting a critical schedule requirement. It could be the only way to get things started and get things done. And we talked before, you know, like, September 11th was a big deal to get things started quickly. I imagine there were a ton of letter contracts issued immediately after that in order to get things moving. Another reason the government should care is letter contracts come under criticism sometimes. Sometimes they're perceived as giving away all of the government's negotiation power. because once you sign that letter contract, you're committed to that contractor, and you've lost the power of competition. You've lost the power of competition to get you to a fair and reasonable price. So lots of people believe that once you're linked to that contractor, the government has a much more difficult time getting a fair and reasonable deal.
Yeah, and the logic in that is you've already started working. I mean, again, think about what's actually happening is that the contractor has started working and the letter contract gave them the authorization to do that. So they're already spending taxpayer money doing stuff before we've finished negotiation. That feels like a really uncomfortable situation to be in.
Right. And if you let that definitization schedule linger, if you don't stick to the schedule that you established in the letter contract to get it definitized, your definitized price, what you're able to negotiate, is pretty much going to be what the contractor spends because they're working. Another side effect of that is the contractor sort of ends up defining the requirements because the work is complete or the work is past the point where it's feasible to make changes without huge extra expense. So it is important that once you get it started that you keep working to close the deal. So I know from experience, I think I was once the king of yuccas.
That's a really interesting title.
Yeah. It's really easy to be lax about the schedule to definitize these once the work starts because the urgency seems to be over. What you do is you end up going on to the next urgent thing that has to be done. And this letter contract you issued, they're already working. Everybody's happy. The work's moving along. So you lose focus on actually closing it, and you end up negotiating mostly actuals. It's not good for the government because they lose the cost control and the requirements control. It's not good for the industry because, this is my experience from the other side, as you've worked down the letter contract road, the government generally wants to say, well, there's no risk left in this effort. You've already gotten through it, so fee should be really low. We don't need to give you a high fee to compensate for that risk because you've already worked through it. And that's wrong in many ways, but it's because both sides lost focus on getting it negotiated quickly.
And to kind of point out one reason why that happens, let's zoom out and look at this from a customer perspective. The customer needs to get this work done. You've given them a contract to get there. Because contracting officer, remember, this the whole idea is you're between the person who needs the work done and the person who can do the work. Well, the person who needs the work done is getting the work done for them by the person who can do the work. So in their mind, this is already done. So your job, for those of you who are program managers listening to this, understand the risk you're increasing by not focusing on getting it definitized. Because your expectation is, oh, I already got this done. I have my solution. I can keep my program problem is fixed. I don't need to worry about that contract. And I had this conversation with a program manager a couple of times on my yuccas. And their focus is no longer getting it definitized because their work's getting done already. And I understand that.
It's human nature.
Exactly. So the going back to the communication, we as the contracting and acquisition people need to help them understand here are the risks that are piling up. And one of the great ones you just brought up was this idea of if we wait until day number 114 to have them change this part of the production cycle, we're going to have to redo a whole lot of things. It's going to cost us even more money. Yeah. So there are lots of stuff like that.
But that's a great shift to why industry should care about letter contracts, because it's not just the government program manager that gets that way. Contractors need to understand that letter contracts aren't a free-for-all. You can't just spend because it's undefined, right? There are limits to it, and you got to remain focused on what's the end goal, and you have to be communicating with the customer and try to define as much as you can so that you're not wasting government money. Another reason why industry should care is it's very difficult to submit a price for something that you're working on currently. Your actual costs as you've been working and your estimate for what it's going to take to complete it, the line between those two becomes a moving target. And as time ticks along, what ends up is you keep getting asked, the government wants updates to your actuals as you go. Very complicated to pick a point and lock that in and move along. Not very complicated. Depends on the program. Could be very complicated.
Well, either way, it's going to feel like you're putting the plane together while you're flying.
Exactly. That's funny.
which is an emotional event for everybody, right?
Yeah. It's, so for industry side, it's difficult to actually be efficient about how you're completing the work if the requirements are a moving target. And if you haven't defined, hopefully you've got some broad description of the requirements so everybody knows sort of what direction you're going. But even then, it can be very difficult to have everything right. You don't want to have to redo work. The government doesn't want you to have to redo work because that costs money. It's hard to focus properly if everyone doesn't know where the end goal is. And that's with letter contracts, you might not know exactly what that end goal is.
Yeah, and you have to be careful. The way these contracts work is that there's a ceiling. There's a ceiling amount of money. So let's say it's a $10 million project. And I had one that this happened with. It was a $10 million contract, and we expected it might cost a little bit more than that. And we talked through it with the contractor before we signed it, and they said, "Yeah, we can do it under that. Yes, we can do it for under that. Yes, we can do it for under that." And in the end, it ended up costing them about 10% more. And because the contract, you can only negotiate downward from that ceiling, it was very painful for everybody. I think they ended up kind of breaking even on it. But just the amount of time we spent trying to get the changes made to get more money on the contract and negotiate, get new approvals. I mean, it's a big deal. So the more you communicate about, okay, what are we trying to do? How much is this really going to cost? Let's assume it's going to cost more than we think and budget accordingly and then come back from that. All of that doesn't happen if you're not communicating.
Yeah, that's a great point. Letter contracts can make it easier to get things started, but they can make it more complicated to get them closed, to get them negotiated.
Exactly.
All right, let's wrap this up. Letter contracts help cut through that red tape and can get work started now. They have to include a schedule to get the final negotiations complete to definitize them. And that schedule is super important. You got to follow that like it is a competitive source selection. Because if you don't, that's where all the other complications come in.
And limiting the expenditures to that ceiling. I mean, I can foot stomp that ceiling all day long, but that analogy of you feel like you're putting the plane together while you're flying, the pricing models behind that and the updates and just having to constantly adjust things, it's not easy. And being aware of what is the plan, what are the deadlines, are we doing this monthly? Think about those kind of things so you can track them.
Yeah, it's really hard to establish an estimate for the cost if things are undefined at the beginning. So that ceiling, picking the right ceiling can be quite complicated for some programs. It all goes back to communication and trust between industry and government here. There is lots of room for confusion and complications and frustration if those communications aren't clear. It's especially complicated because once the work starts, industry and the user, I'm not talking the acquisition office here, but the mission, the people that need the end product, once the work starts, they're probably communicating much more than they would be like in a competitive source selection situation. It's much easier to cross that line where the acquisition office loses control. Got to remember that the user needs and requirements, the official stuff has to be passed through the contracting officer. And that line is harder to define once that work is started.
Yeah, and so the example here would be a production one that we had. They're making the vehicle, and it's on the production line. They wanted to change how the axle was put together. A certain angle of the axle was going to make the steel needed to be a higher tensile strength. On the fly, the program manager says, "Oh, yeah, let's use that different steel. That different steel actually costs more, et cetera, et cetera." Mm-hmm. I'm not even there. I'm in my office, not even at the plant, right? And this decision's made on the fly because, again, they're trying to get the work done. And we fixed it, okay, because it came home and they emailed me that night and they said, "Here's a change we made." But that's a communication thing. But that's how it happens. Is you're on the fly trying to get this thing done, and that's the kind of stuff that is not likely to happen, very unlikely to happen on something that the requirement is etched in stone. Contractor knows they're only getting $100,000. They're not going to agree to different steel, right? It's for a fixed price contract. In this case, that's still fuzzy.
Letter contract. You want it? I'll do it.
Exactly. See how that goes?
Yeah. All right, that's a great place to wrap it up. I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right, that's a good one. See you, Paul.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode. We'd like to say thanks again to our sponsor, ProPricer. And remember, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, send me an email at paul@contractingofficerpodcast.com. Thanks for joining us.